Hey, Deadpan. So sometime in Deadpan history, I had Rich Gattino on, the editor-in-chief of MetalAsylum.net, and also actually a former bandmate of mine in the Matt Mango experience or whatever whatever that we were calling it.
I think that's what it was.
But you know what? Actually, I don't know if you remember this, Rich, but it was a two-parter episode because you and I talked for so long, but after I released part one, my hard drive went completely, you know, it went completely belly up. So the second part of that interview was just lost forever.
Oh, okay. I don't remember that.
Yeah, that's where we solved all the problems of the universe in the second half, but it's just gone forever.
That's the way it always happens, right?
Right. But I remember the conversation well. I just don't, at this point, I don't recall what kind of stuff we got out. So it's good to have you back on the program.
Thanks.
Yeah, you know, and plus we can do some updates. Now it's 2011. We can have an updated conversation, talk about all the things that are new with you and with Metal Asylum and with the metal world in general.
That sounds good.
So yeah, let's go in that order. What's new with yourself and the site?
What is new? it's been a little slow. I mean, I've been keeping up with new things that have been coming out, but I've been working on that little short horror film, so that's been sidetracking me a little bit, but I've been able to keep up with still that, you know, the stuff that's been coming out, just not as much as I used to.
Okay.
We updated the website, about 2 weeks ago, so I'll do another update in about a week.
Well, now that you mentioned that, you gotta dish a little bit on the horror film.
Oh, alright, it's a short. It's only about 20 minutes long. I'm going to use it to try and sell an actual 90-minute feature, hopefully. So it's called What Waits in the Dark.
Right.
It's very, very influenced by the classic 80s horror movies from the early, mid-80s, when before they really got crazy with all the horror movies that were done after holidays and all the knockoffs and all the ones that became really cheesy and all that kind of stuff. I tried to keep it serious and dark and influenced by the originators without it getting, into that realm where it just gets kind of silly and over the top and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Excellent. Yeah, and actually, now I remember, of course, you... back in the day, you used to run the Halloween haunted houses, so special effects and gory special effects and that type of thing is not unfamiliar to you at all.
Right, right. And I don't do too much of it in the short because I was mostly going for mood and atmosphere and a different feel. I didn't want it to be a gore fest.
Gotcha. Excellent.
So it's a little more influenced by, I'd say, like Halloween and first couple Friday the 13th. My Bloody Valentine, a couple things like that, and not in the realm of where it gets into like Day of the Dead or Hellraiser or anything like that. I wasn't going into that feel, you know?
Gotcha. Okay.
Which isn't a bad thing. I love those kind of movies. I just wasn't going for that with this. Since I only had 20 minutes to do it, I wanted to keep the mood a certain way and not go for gore.
Excellent. And so that's going to be available, you know, we'll drop some website info.
It's got a Facebook page for now. It's called What Waits in the Dark. And I'm going to put the video up, the short, on the Facebook page, and it'll go on YouTube. But I'm not too sure when, because I'm going to send it to film festivals. So sometimes when you go to film festivals, you can't post it online until after it's done.
Okay, gotcha.
So I got to see what happens with that. But it'll probably be on the Facebook page temporarily, and then I'll see where it goes from there, where I take it from there. You know,
excellent.
Hopefully it'll win a couple awards. Hopefully it'll get picked up by somebody. I don't know.
Yeah, well, excellent. You know.
You know, that kept me busy for a while, editing and stuff like that. But I still, you know, had time to update the Asylum. Like the last couple things we reported on was the new Arch Enemy album that just came out, and they had some new tracks that were streaming online. Anthrax finally confirmed September for a release date for their album Worship Music with Joey Belladonna singing.
Seriously, no kidding.
Yeah, uh-huh. So it's finally coming out.
And this is the album that's been in development hell for them since like 2008, right?
I think even before that. Probably because they had John Bush singing, then there was that other guy, Dan Nelson, who was there for a couple months, and then he was out, and then apparently, you know, Bush was maybe coming back, but then it was Belladonna, so the revolving door just was the holdup, I guess, you know? So now it's finally Belladonna in the band. They're keeping it together, and the record's coming out in September.
Yeah, see, and you thought my life was dramatic, you know, gosh.
No, I don't think anybody's as filled with drama as much as Anthrax is.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's cool. And actually, you know, this is why it's good for me to be friends with you. I actually was unaware of a new arch enemy. You know,
they, oh, really?
Yeah, that's a band who I was really resistant to, but they won me over. And it's not just because, you know, Angela Gasso, just not because of the way she looks on stage. I mean, they won me over. It's a good band.
Yeah, they are. Yep, and I don't really like too much extreme metal, but I like them because, you know, she has a harsh voice, but there's still plenty of melody in the music and stuff, and good rhythms and grooves and stuff, so.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say, honestly, you know, not to be too harsh on it, but yeah, I'd say her voice is probably the thing I like the least about the band.
Uh-huh.
But then again, you know, like I said, she's...
I think it balances out the music. The melody qualities of the music balances it out.
Right, yeah, I mean, that, right. It works, they make it work. So that's good stuff. Cool, we'll check out the new Arch Enemy. But I'm totally interrupting you, so go on, please.
No problem. So there was the Anthrax, that Ed Guy, who I was just talking to you about off the show, about that band. They have a new record coming out in August. I love those guys. They're like... if you took like Motley Crue or one of those bands from the LA scene and you mixed them with Helloween and Iron Maiden, that's what Ed Guy's like. You know, Judas Priest is doing their Epitaph, you know, tour, their last run of official tour. That's coming around in November and December.
Oh, I hadn't heard. Wow.
Last official run as far as extensive tour dates.
Yeah, they are getting up there. I mean, they're pretty old guys at this point, so I get it.
Yeah,
I saw them on the British Steel tour. Rob Halford looked pretty old. I mean, he might have just not been feeling well that night, but he looked pretty old. He sounded great, but you know, he's getting up there. So I mean, they've had a great run. What's up?
The band sounded great too. You know, they got that DVD out for the British Steel tour.
I watched the DVD. Yeah, it came with it was like a double disc thing, and one disc, yep, was the album, the other one was this. Yes,
fantastic show. They're tight as hell in that.
Yeah, they sounded really great. I mean, you know, the new drummer, not like he's new, he's been with them for 20 years now, but you know, the newer drummer with that old material, it's just everything sounds, you know, sounds so fresh. Yep. and so fantastic. Steeler, yep. You know, you and I talked about how incredible Steeler sounds with you know, with kind of a little bit, yep, more of a speed metal approach to the drums.
Yep. Yeah, sounds great. And then there's the Big Four, which is coming to the East Coast, not by you yet.
Right.
That's in September.
Yeah, that's a big deal. You know, it wasn't possible for me to get out there. They did the show in California, but that's still pretty incredible. I'd like to see set list. I haven't actually looked them up myself, but yeah, those are the four bands I think that really changed a lot for me. I want to touch on that with you later on, but you know, those four bands, Metallica, Anthrax, Slayer, and
Megadeth.
Sorry, Dave. Yeah, those are the four bands, you know, that were they really changed. They opened up my eyes a lot about what, you know, what metal was and is.
I'm sure something closer to you, probably in the Midwest or something, you can get to.
Yeah, I know. I hope to. I have to get a chance to see them. I mean, Dave has a strong connection to Arizona, so hopefully, uh-huh, they'll come through here.
Right.
Oiga, señor. We are
Deadpanites.
You know.
Jack Mangan's Deadpan Community.
If you're the
Deadpanites.
Where are your badges? Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
So, well, that's cool. I mean, and you got to, you know, of course, metalasylum.net. That's where you know that's there's always new reviews and always new metal news and new other shit going up there all the time. I mean, even with the even with the movie, you know, I actually haven't really noticed a drop off in your production on the site. The site seems to be going strong.
Yeah, it's been I've still been keeping it up. I just haven't as much as I have. I think, you know, like concerts, I've only been to 3 or 4 since the beginning of the year. So, you know, not as active because it took me a week to shoot the film. And then I, you know, every week, like twice a week, I'm editing or doing sound and stuff. So, you know, even for 20 minutes short, it takes up a lot of time, you know?
Right. No, I get you.
The media reviews, though, we've been keeping up on, you know, we just reviewed the new Hammerfall record, Infected, it's called, which is a pretty cool record. A little different for them, but it's still very much a Hammerfall album.
Okay, yeah, we had talked offline about that one. And what's their sound? How would you describe their sound?
Hammerfall is like probably a little bit of Manowar with a little bit of again a little bit of Halloween, a little bit of Iron Maiden, a little bit of Judas Priest. All mixed up together, a little bit of Accept.
Cool.
Yeah. Hey,
you know, I know Halloween has really dropped off the radar, especially in the U.S. There's a time when I would have put Halloween on the same stage. If you're going to do a big thrash concert, I would have put Halloween right up there, right alongside of. Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, speed. I know that they're more considered speed metal. This is something else we got to touch on. You know, now that the metal tree has branched out in so many freaking different directions. But I would say that if you were going to do the big speed metal, thrash metal bands of the 80s, I would have put Halloween right up there, right alongside of Anthrax. There was a time I would have.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe for with the first couple records, like Walls of Jericho and Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 1.
Right around that time, yeah. After Part 2.
Yeah, and they had those elements. Not so much a thrash band, you know, they're more like a speed, and then they were like a power metal band. You know, that's kind of the genre that, well, they did. They invented that genre with the fast Maiden twin harmonies and the double bass drums, but then you had the very melodic singing and the big epic choruses, and, you know, they had the song Halloween and then Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 2, which were two epics, kind of like Maiden's Rhyme the Ancient Mariner.
Right, yep, exactly. Yeah, and I would agree, you know, they certainly didn't sound like Bay Area thrash bands. But, you know, back in the day when those were my most frequently played cassettes, you know, probably there was a time when Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 2 and Spreading the Disease from Anthrax were the two cassettes that were getting this, you know, worn out in my cassette player.
Yeah.
And, you know, my old Emerson radio. So I would say that that's where and also those bands were also part of, for me personally, my graduation into that whole new world of heavier stuff, you know, that my friends were afraid of.
Right.
You know, my friends who would listen to Iron Maiden, but anything beyond, they were like, oh, I don't know about that Metallica, you know, that's heavy,
right.
You know,
and Halloween was even more different because they're European, so they had a little more of a different edge to their thing, you know, a different twist on it.
Right, you know, just the snare drum, you know, the 16th notes on the snare drum, you know, that's stuff that's just that fast and relentless. That was just eye opening to me, and I loved it. But, you know, like I said, there were a lot of people who kind of stopped at AC/DC and Iron Maiden. They said, no, I'm not going beyond that. And you know, Metallica would occasionally go in there, but really that's where Halloween and Metallica more than any place else. That's where they intersect, is when, you know, the Metallica would occasionally go with the high, really, really high tempo songs. And,
yeah,
you know, I'd never heard anything like that. And that was what made me fall for Halloween.
And the high singing too, you know, the voice was a higher pitch too.
Right. Yeah. Even right. Michael Kiske and the guy before, you know, there, when, you'll know his
Kai
name.
Hans.
Yes. When Kai Hansen. Yeah.
Who does Gamma, you know, who's done Gamma Ray for 20 years now.
Right, exactly. But, you know, but that first album, I mean, the Walls of Jericho album, I mean, he's like, he's really up there.
Yeah. Well, if you like those two, then, you know, if anybody likes them, they should still like them, and they should be checking out records like Master of the Rings and Time of the Oath. What's the other one? Better Than Raw. Those three are definitely up there with Keeper Part 1 and 2. And then, like I said, Gambling with the Devil is awesome, and so is Seven Sinners. For 2010, when I did my top list, I'm looking at it right now. My top five was The Overkill, Ironbound, Halloween, Seven Sinners, The New Except, Blood of the Nations. That was, what a return for those guys. Rat's Record, Infestation. That was another excellent return for them. Very old school classic Rat. And then our love for Nevermore, both of us. They were number five for me. The Obsidian Conspiracy, that came in at number five.
Wow, so that's, I mean, Nevermore are the new kids on that block, you know. Not to reference New Kids on the Block, but you know, that's the top four of those are really, really, they're all geezers, and Nevermore are not exactly, you know, young either. So that's interesting.
Yeah, but they all came out with records that were such a return to their great records from the 80s that they all deserve to get in there, you know.
And, you know, that's actually, there's a perfect segue here. We're at a fork in the road, because I wanted to talk to you about the big news of this year. There are a couple of huge news items. One of them is an Evermore related, of course. And then the other thing I wanted to touch on was kind of to help figure out what this thing is that we both obsess about, and that, you know, a lot of, that millions of people around the world obsess about, you know, what it is and what it, you know, how to kind of decipher all of the ways it's evolved. I mean, there was a time when heavy metal was just simply heavy metal, and then, you know, then it started to kind of branch out into different subgenres, and now there are more subcategories of metal than there are of anything, maybe except for like jazz or I mean, there's probably,
yeah,
it's got an incredible amount of subgenres. So yeah, let's go that route first.
at least in a, like we were saying off the show, at least in Europe, it's recognized, all the genres are recognized as real hard rock and heavy metal. And then when you see those festival lineups over there, the diversity is great, but they're, you know, they all kind of fall under the same banner. But then, like in America, it becomes very one-dimensional. The variety is just absent. They don't recognize, you know, when it comes to festivals and touring lineups, they don't, you know, the American media, the press, TV, radio, whatever, they don't recognize the great bands that are recognized in Europe, you know, for their variety and diversity, but also their commonness, you know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. And now, actually, while I don't disagree at all about the American perception of what metal is, I would say that there is a variance. If you just say the phrase heavy metal to your average record, your average person, actually, just your average Joe, they're either going to conjure an image of John Bon Jovi, Black Album era and beyond Metallica, or just like a generic image of some screaming guy with huge hair and a you know, blistering guitar. Like that's kind of I think the average Joe's image of what metal is, and that, you know, they don't. That's something I think that we can do sort of to educate a little bit as to what it is. I'm not saying we're going to convert everybody, but I think there's, on the other hand, I think there is a flavor of metal, no matter how, I mean, if you really can't take stuff that gets really dark or stuff that gets extreme, I'd still say that there is a flavor of metal that's for you.
Yeah, especially if you like more melodic stuff, that would be the hair metal, as it's called, but more melodic hard rock metal. I call it.
Right. Or even, you know, of course, I don't know how anyone on the planet can dislike like Black Sabbath or the best of, the best of Led Zeppelin. I don't know how anyone on the planet can. I can see how you can say like, I'm not crazy about some of Black Sabbath stuff. But I mean, Black Sabbath is so accessible. And same with, you know, Led Zeppelin. Again, I know sometimes Robert Plant gets screechy and all that. But I mean, there's some Led Zeppelin that's just undeniable.
All those guys, the guys at the root, the beginning of the whole sound, Zeppelin, Purple,
yes,
Kiss, Scorpions,
Jimi Hendrix. You know, Jimi Hendrix is no one would call him metal, but there's no way you can't. Yeah. he absolutely needs to be associated with metal. I mean, Voodoo Child is definitely, you know, that represents so many things that metal is.
He's right underneath the guys at the foundation, I would say. You know, I think more of the foundation would be absolutely Sabbath and Zeppelin, Deep Purple and Kiss, Alice Cooper, because they had more of those, you know, they had more of those metal-based riffs. They created those kind of things, you know?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
He was a little more, you know, he's more bluesy and that type of thing, a little more hippie-ish, you know?
Right, but, you know, I mean, just what he was doing with the guitar. I mean, let's face it, metal is a guitar... driven music, and, you know, and he just reinvented that thing for all of us. And also, you know, I would also throw out there that without jazz fusion, I don't think speed metal would be what it is today, and I don't think a lot of metal wouldn't be what it is today if it wasn't for some of that, you know, if you listen to Mahavishnu Orchestra from like 1970, the stuff John McLaughlin was playing was blistering. He was playing like, you know, 25 notes per second. I mean, it was speed metal, you know. It's just it was called jazz fusion,
kind of like where Megadeth's first record kind of comes from, Killing Is My Business.
Yeah, Dave Mustaine's style, certainly. I don't know if he would call those guys influences or any of that stuff, but yeah, there's... Go ahead, I'm doing all the talking now.
That's all right. So you were talking about, we're trying to... You know, we were saying about the differences in different genres and everything, and I was just saying about how it's recognized differently than it is in America. In America, right. It's seen as very one-dimensional, and the variety isn't... recognized. If they play a festival over there, they all play the same festival and it all works out. If they do that in America, like if there's the the Rockstar Mayhem Festival or the Ozfest, you don't get any variety. You're getting a whole bunch of bands that all scream and yell. There's nobody that's singing, there's nobody that's, you know, melodic players, there's no variety. I'm just looking at the festival lineup for the Rockstar Mayhem this year.
Uh-huh.
And aside from Megadeth and Trivium, I would say you're getting, Godsmack's a little more mainstream, and so is Disturbed. But you got Machine Head, In Flames, Suicide Silence, All Shall Perish, Unearth, Kingdom of Sorrow. You have all these bands that are a bunch of yellers.
Well, you know, there's another point. I'll try to be concise here, but there's another point I think is that, you know, for a long... When we were growing up, you know, we were always... We were watching our music get really slammed and disrespected a lot, even though, you know, you had really intelligent people out there. You also, let's face it, there were lots of meatheads out there who were giving us all a bad name. But, you know, you also had Bruce Dickinson writing songs based on classic poetry, and you know, you had bands like Hades putting stuff based on Shakespeare. So I'd say that, you know, we had our high art side as well as our low art side. But, you know, we're always fighting for legitimacy. And honestly, in this day and age, I'd say metal, on the one hand, metal has won. Finally, they're the mainstream hard rock stations. That's metal stuff. But, you know, none of it I like. When I listen to those stations, it's like 2 hours go by before I hear a song I like. So it's a lot of that. Yeah, it's that kind of screaming has become acceptable.
The screamo metal.
Yeah.
That's why the American festivals are all very one-dimensional. It's just all like extreme hardcore in-your-face bands,
right?
You know, but you go to Europe and you go to the Wacken Festival or Bang Your Head or Sweden Rock or something like that, and you'll see everything from, geez, Europe and Rat to Judas Priest and Trivium to Dimmu Borgir and Gamma Ray to Candlemass and I don't know. I mean, the whole spectrum of hard rock and metal. Without it being a bunch of bands that just yell and scream, you might get one or two of those amongst everybody else that has their own style and sound, you know?
Right. Well, let's see. If you're going to be a hard rock sellout now, that's there's a way of doing it. And, you know, in a way, good, because we never had that before. But on the other hand, I'm not interested.
No.
Me, Grimlock, listen to Jack Mangan, Deadpan. When me not fighting Decepticons. Me, Grimlock, a Tyrannosaurus Rexens. Me not dumb. Me Autobot. Me, Grimlock, love dead man.
They only associated with just yelling and screaming and bashing on just senseless riffs. And then when they listen to somebody like an Iron Maiden or a Stradivarius or Twisted Sister, for that matter, whatever, they can, I don't know if they can notice the difference, but it's clearly evident that there is a difference between those kind of bands and the screaming metalcore, just angst-ridden noisemakers.
And well, and let's face it, you know, Beavis and Butthead and all of the real people who Beavis and Butthead were based upon, those guys didn't do our genre any favors. You know, they certainly didn't help. but, you know, we know what's out there. And actually, there's a perfect segue, I think, into, I think, what's exciting to me in 2011. My favorite band right now, my favorite artist right now is, I think, Opeth. Opeth has a new album this year, and I think, you know, they've just been continually pushing the envelope, and I think what they've done is brilliant. You know, it's just brilliant music in every way, and
it's on that extreme end too.
Right. You know, they do a great job of just going the line between absolutely beautiful. I mean, the word beautiful is the best word to describe some of the passages in the same song. It'll be an absolutely beautiful, folky, right, kind of very sweet sounding passage that will segue, you know, masterfully into him kind of doing the roaring voice and very harsh guitars and drums. And I think it's really a fantastic forward step for all of this music.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what makes Symphony X great too, because they're complex, but they're not complex where it's too much, and they have their peaks and valleys, and they have their heavy riffs, and they have their great singing, but there's always a chorus, there's always the melody with the guitars lines or the keyboard lines, so there's always a goal to each of the songs. There's always a song. It's just not just overly complex playing, you know.
Right. There are parts of metal right now that are maybe a little stale, but it's good to know that there are parts that are still exciting and they're still progressive.
You have a couple bands that you're writing about. They said they're a little too complicated for their own good, right?
Basically, yeah. And it's a shame because, I mean, there are good little nuggets to find, but overall, right, the experience isn't as rewarding as it could be. Because you're right, and you know, kudos to them for showing off their intellectual chops and disproving, you know, going counter to everyone's perception of this stuff. But yeah, I don't. It doesn't bear for repeat listens to me.
It's a little too much.
Right. But now what about you? What do you think is exciting for this year? You know, news, even bad news, you know, of course there's the Nevermore news is bad news, but you know, what about, what's exciting right now and what's going on in 2011 in the metal world?
Let's see, aside from the news that we talked about, this new Symphony X record is out, which is very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting that very soon too, right?
Excellent. Yeah, I look forward to that, definitely.
Yeah, I'm sending it out to you. Let's see. I think, as far as I know, Megadeth is putting out a new record, I think, later in the year, I hope.
But what about the Nevermore Fall Apart?
Jeff and Van are out of the band, and there's no other news other than that. That's all everybody knows, I think. That's the only press that they put out about it.
Wow.
And I guess Oral is doing Sanctuary still, so that's the only thing we know so far at this point.
Oh, well, there you go. So
yeah.
Yeah, because I believe you said that Sanctuary was actually Jeff Loomis was going to jump on as a hired gun.
I think he was actually. I don't know if he's still part of that now that he's out of Nevermore. There's probably some kind of bad feelings there since two of them left the band. So who knows if he's even involved with Sanctuary now?
Right. No, I assume Sanctuary can go forward just without Loomis.
Yeah.
And what was it? We said there are three. Oh, well, I mean, I was excited about Devin Townsend is kind of wrapping up his latest experiment this year. Of course, the Big Four tour we touched on, that's other big news.
Right. There's some other cool stuff that I posted up on the site that has been reviewed lately that's cool. Let me see. I'm looking at the list right now, recent stuff we put up. There's a band called Wolf. I think they're from Sweden, actually. Great traditional band, if you like, well, of course, most people are going to like Iron Maiden. in the vein of Iron Maiden and Judas Priest, they're really cool. They follow up their formulas you know, very similar to it, but they're not direct ripoffs. So very classic heavy metal.
Nice.
It's called Legions of Bastards. It's good stuff. And if you like the progressive metal like Dream Theater and Symphony X, there's another band called Pagan's Mind. Have you heard of them?
I've not, but you know, I definitely go for the prog stuff.
Yeah, they're excellent too. The record's called Heavenly Ecstasy. They're like somewhere between Symphony X and Dream Theater. They have elements of both bands.
Nice.
Yeah. What else has recently come out? Or coming out? What do you have there? You have a couple things that you're checking out, aren't you?
Yeah, I have Anna Kafer that's missing some vowels. That's one of the I don't really have anything anybody's heard of. I think I sent you a review for Forbidden, who honestly not many people even have heard of, even though they were a minor hit back in the 80s from the Bay Area scene.
Okay.
Sax
has a new record coming out. I forgot about that. Yeah, I haven't listened to it yet, but that's coming out. That should be pretty good. I heard a couple songs from it.
Yeah, well, you know, they need to get Bruce Dickinson back.
Saxon?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
I'm just being a jerk. I'm just kidding.
Because there's nothing wrong with Saxon. I kind of find it kind of weird.
No, I'm just totally kidding. No, you know, I was just playing word association. You know, you say Saxon, and immediately that's what I think of. I think of you know, Bruce Dickinson before he was able to shave. You know, this is actually the perfect branch to the other thing I wanted to touch on with you is that we're talking about you've mentioned a couple of like new bands, but we are talking about a lot of geezers here. We're talking about your top five, as we said. They're really all five bands are kind of geezerish, especially the four. So what? Let's face it, all these guys, you know, you mentioned Judas Priest is kind of looking at hanging it up. Ozzy has retired about 15 times. So these bands are, you know, this is an aging genre. And, you know, all of our...
At least for them. The problem is that in America, I'm going to say again, they're not recognizing the second generation that should have been picking up where these guys are going to be leaving off. You know, it happens in Europe. It happens on all the festivals over there. They get to play to all the masses over there. But in America, it doesn't happen, you know?
Right.
So all these bands that have been around for, God, now 15 years at this point, like your Symphony X, your Nevermore, your Hammerfall, Ed Guy, Blind Guardian, Stradivarius, Gamma Ray, even the newer ones like this band Wolf, I said, there's a whole bunch of them that should just be picking up where when the originators retire, they should be picking up where they're leaving off. And they're doing it, you know, in small clubs and, you know, theaters, but they're not getting onto the big stages still. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
Right. And that's where I'm going with this. I mean, what is this, in 20 years from now, maybe even 10 years from now, what's metal going to look like? Because I mean, in 10 to 20 years, Overkill will be too old for this, you know, and Metallica will probably have retired.
Now you mention Overkill. Speaking of new music that should be picking up where, you know, the originator's taken off, there's a band that I reviewed this year. Their record is called Time Is Up from a band called Havoc.
Okay.
Awesome. They are, I mean, there's a few new thrash bands out there that are great that I like. Lazarus AD is really cool. Who else is good? Gamma Bomb is cool. Bonded by Blood. Warbringer. But these guys, Havoc, they put out Time Is Up a few months ago, and it's going to be in my top five for the year. It's just slamming.
Nice.
Yeah.
But
really,
you know,
I mean, record from beginning to end, it's everything you want from a little bit of Destruction with a little bit of Exodus mixed in with a little bit of Overkill, a little bit of Metallica, a little bit of Megadeth. You know, they take a little bit of everybody and they put it into a blender, and that's what they sound like, and they're amazing.
And what do you think the sound is going to be like? And what do you think? Obviously, we've talked. You know, it's hard to give metal one sound. I mean, there are literally hundreds of metal sounds. But what do you think? What do you think? Where do you think we're headed? I know this is getting deep and philosophical, but where do you think we're headed? I mean, what do you think the future will bring?
It's definitely more diverse, because now you have like those bands that are all the pagan type of stuff, like Korpiklaani and Ensiferum, and there's a whole bunch of them. I can't think of them right now, but there's about 10 of them, and they have those pagan sounds and the woodwind instruments and all that kind of stuff, and the strings on stage, you know, the little violins and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that whole batch, like Amon Amarth, you know, that Viking kind of metal. There's that whole genre that's out there. So, and I know that's relatively successful, even in America too. Those tours do pretty well too.
Sure.
So I don't think the branching out is the problem. I think it's it getting recognized for what it is, being different, but also being rooted in the traditional sound, you know, because they have those traditional sounds, but they also have, you know, all these new flavors and textures to it, because they're using all these different instrumentations in the music as well, besides guitars and drums and bass, you know?
Yeah, that's something that's there too. I know we it seems like the genre blending days are behind us somewhat. Mm-hmm. There was a time when that was all the rage, where, you know, you'd hear like, hey, metal and rap, hey, metal and reggae, hey, metal. And I think that's kind of
that was a bad thing, though, metal and rap. That was, you know, it was great for Anthrax to do it for one song and Aerosmith to do it with Run DMC for one song, but after Anthrax, and then it spawned all those fucking shit shows that came afterwards, and everybody was trying to be black hard rockers when they're white guys and being ghetto like Korn. Oh, Jesus Christ. That was the beginning of the end for what was quote unquote, you know, the new face of hard rock and metal in America. You know what I mean?
You mean NU umlauts metal?
New metal, NU metal, yeah. Jeez, I'll tell you, the Americans, too bad. I apologize. I feel sorry for you guys. I don't apologize. It's just too bad they got bamboozled. When a lot of stuff was coming out, I was paying attention to what was happening in Europe, so.
I guess this is a case where I would defend the band Korn themselves, but all of their whole class, the rest of them can all just can go and screw. Because I think I would defend, you know, Korn, just because I think they tried, you know, and no matter, at the end of the day, I think no matter what genre you're doing, even if you are doing, you know, country metal, God forbid, you know, if your music is good, if you're really trying for originality and really trying for just to write an original sounding song, then more power to you. And that's where, you know, Limp Bizkit is a complete and utter disaster.
God, I mean, all of it was, I hated it all. System of a Downer, as I call them. Oh my God, just by looking at all those bands, obviously they were not trying to be a traditional hard rock or metal band. They were trying to be something that it wasn't. It was something completely in left field. So why was it being put into that category and recognized as such when it isn't? You know, it's just like Metallica. As much as it's stupid to think that by cutting their hair that they were doing something different and they were selling out, but they actually were, because they were changing. They changed their sound. They changed their look. They changed their logo. It was just, you know?
Yeah, what's an AFBIT? An AFBIT, something I'm cashing in. Sorry, you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan. Deadpan is the way.
Right. Well, of course, with Metallica, I don't mind them. Actually, there's a perfect... They did try to incorporate country and folk elements, and actually, I applaud that. If it was a genuine attempt at artistry, but it wasn't. It was, right. Hey, we can sell more records if we throw in some twangy guitars, and, you know, fuck
and
that.
We cut all of our hair off and we sit in around a table in pimp suits on the back of our record. You know, those records were properly titled "Load and Reload." It was just a load. There was like three songs, maybe on both of those records that I can take, and then the rest of it I could throw out.
Right. Well, you know, and their return to at least emulating their old sound. They did not recapture it, but they finally ditched.
Well, it's better though. It's much better than what Load and Reload were, and it's so much better than Saint Anger, which I don't even want to mention that title.
But you know what? I would say actually, I like the latest album, but they you know, they finally ditched Bob Rock. I mean, that was, they got Rick Rubin in, and allegedly Rick Rubin came in and said, look, you guys are awesome. You know, you, why are you writing these 5-minute crappy songs for, you know, he said, you guys are still going to sell out every arena. You guys are still going to sell zillions of copies. Why not reward the people who have stuck with you since 1984? And apparently that struck a chord with them. And they said, okay, yeah, we're going to go back and write 10-minute long songs. And we're going to write stuff that's a little bit ugly again. And we're going to sing about, like, really, like, you know, we're going to get the lyrics to be really harsh about uncomfortable things like death and things, and as opposed to, you know, I'm King Nothing and you're, you know, I'm a badass and you're King Nothing, that kind of bullshit. That's what I understand, you know, from looking at it from the outside. I understand that that's what happened. And, you know, good for them, but I still think it's too little too late.
Yeah, yeah. I think even Megadeth, who detoured for a record or two, you know, it took them a little bit to get themselves back together as well musically. But their detour was so much less disappointing than what Metallica's was.
Yeah. You know?
And then when their return came for Endgame, and even the two before that, United Abominations and The System Has Failed, they beat Metallica on all three records as far as coming back with better records.
Although those were a lot lower profile. I mean, I remember in The System Has Failed, there was a huge push, and then the album kind of appeared and vanished. So, I mean, that's the state of it. You know, that it depends on how you want to be measured. Unfortunately, Dave Mustaine and Metallica want to be measured by, you know, their how many plays they're getting on VH1.
But the records did improve, though. You know, The System Has Failed was good. I liked it. And then the next one of United Abomination was even better. And then Endgame was just ridiculously great.
Well, that's good. I honestly didn't hear much beyond the System Has Failed. But I'm really glad to hear it. I think Dave was the most talented, and maybe not. I hate to use the word smart, but he was the smartest songwriter out of that whole fractured mess of Metallica's, you know, beginnings. I think he was the genius, the musical genius who made Metallica what they are and made Megadeth what they are.
But who wrote, I forgot, it's been a while since I looked at the album credits, who wrote, like, you know, Puppets and Battery and Disposable Heroes and those? Because that record, musically and lyrically, it's just champion.
Right. Well, I mean, I agree. Master of Puppets, to me, is one of the most perfect albums ever released. Yeah. And I don't... Dave Mustaine claimed that they swiped a riff of his for Leper Messiah, and they probably did, let's face it. But who cares? I mean, the rest of the album is masterful. And I just mean they're standing on his shoulders for all that stuff. I think if he hadn't been hanging out with them and pushing the envelope, you know, when they were writing their early material, I think their later stuff wouldn't have been as brilliant without...
Okay.
You know, I'm giving him... Of course, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I wasn't there. But it just seems
to be true, but it probably is true, because look at the last three Megadeth records compared to the last three or four Metallica records. You know, Megadeth's are better than theirs, so.
Right. Well, yeah. And him at his best, and I think he's not doing stuff like Holy Wars anymore. But I mean, I think like Holy Wars and the whole Peace Sells album, I think that demonstrates the musical genius. I mean, those were incredibly complex. They don't sound complex because, you know, they're very accessible. But if you really analyze them as songwriting structures and even just the individual riffs, it's incredibly complex. I mean, this is a guy who, if he hadn't been blowing out his mind so frequently, you know, with hardcore substances, you know, I think he the sky would have been the limit for his talent and his ability.
Well, if you're comparing his stuff to Peace Sells and Rust in Peace, then you got to listen to Endgame, because it's definitely close, very close.
All right, well, I will do that. Well, you know what? I know, I will check it out.
Pretty good with my call. You know me, I'm pretty good with my calls. I gotta pat myself on the back with that one. And I'm telling you, Endgame is Countdown to Extinction meets Rust in Peace.
I'd say that's true of metal, but that's also really true of, that's true of bluegrass. It's true of hip hop. It's true of whatever genre you're talking about. If you want to find the good stuff, you're going to have to dig. It's not going to be served up to you. I mean, that's the reality of 2011. If you want to find good stuff, you're going to have to dig.
Love it. Deadpan is the way.
And you know, we have to touch upon too, which we talked about, but we didn't yet, was that Iron Maiden best of 1990 to 2010 that came out.
Yes. And actually that's perfect. I mean, really, if we had to pick one all-time ambassador for metal, I think no matter how much you love Metallica or anybody else, I'd say it's got to be Maiden. It's got to be Maiden. It's got to be the if you have to choose, if everybody else has to go away, you're only allowed to keep one one right. band for the genre.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be Maiden. It's got to be.
Yep. And he's a favorite of, they're a favorite of both of ours, so.
Yeah. So let's wrap up. We've been talking for a while, so let's wrap up talking about Maiden.
Are you familiar with what the From Here to Eternity best of is?
Yeah, that's actually their latter day greatest hits, right? It's the greatest hits in the era that where everybody stopped listening to them.
Right. from No Prayer for the Dying up to now, The Final Frontier, which came out last year.
What this album, and I know you had some issues with this, but I think it still justifies that they had good material after, like I said, I think we all stopped paying attention, because I think No Prayer for the Dying was a failure. It was not a success. It wasn't terrible.
Fear of the Dark is better, though.
Indeed, absolutely, yeah.
And Afraid to Shoot Strangers is just brilliant. I love that song.
And that's on this compilation, right?
Yeah. They put on Afraid to Shoot Strangers, the song Fear of the Dark, and something else from that album. I can't think of it right now. I'm just looking at my review to see if I can find the song, but I can't think of the title.
Is it Be Quick or Be Dead?
Yeah, Be Quick or Be Dead, which is another good one.
Yes.
Which is like old Iron Maiden, more like Killer's Iron Maiden.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good one. But you know, and beyond that, I think, yeah, you've got Wicker Man, you've got Passchendaele.
Wicker Man's great, too. Wicker Man reminds me a lot of, like, Peace of Mind.
And now, of course, parallel to that, also, even lower on the radar than Maiden, has been Bruce Dickinson's solo career. I know Retro in the deadpan community has been a huge fan of the stuff that he's done. But it's been very metal. It's been a lot more metal than the Tattooed Millionaire days, which I don't, you know, good for him for branching out and experimenting. How do you think that stuff rates?
His solo stuff?
Yeah.
I enjoy it too. Accident of Birth I like a lot. His last three I really liked. I think some of his stuff that he put out when Maiden was doing stuff with Blaze Bailey is better.
And you know, you and I discussed this too. Iron Maiden recently, they did the Somewhere Back in Time tour where they, I know I was unaware. I saw that tour and it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. They played every single song they played from start to finish. I loved every song they played.
The only thing they should have put in was they should have done something from Killers and they should have done Stranger in a Strange Land.
Yeah, well, Stranger in a Strange Land, that was a big hit for them. But, you know, still, I'm not crazy about the recorded version of Heaven Can Wait, but the when they play that live, it kills every time.
Yeah, that's the song.
And I loved that tour, and I thought, okay, Iron Maiden, they get it. They know what people want to hear. But then I saw their next tour. I was all set to buy tickets, and I looked up the set list, and it was a bunch of, it was actually almost nothing from the old days. I think there was Hallowed Be Thy Name and maybe one other, and then the rest of the show was all the new stuff, and then... Now, as we said, there's Passchendaele, there's Wicker Man, but I still was like, meh, I think I'm going to pass.
The biggest thing that disappoints me about them in recent years. Every tour should be something different. When you have that many good records and that many good songs, every tour, the set list should be different. And if you got to do a couple of staples because they're hits, then rotate them. You know, if for the last record you did Number of the Beast and Hallowed Be Thy Name, this time you do The Trooper and Run to the Hills. And you drop the other two and you put in Wasted Years and The Murders in a Room Morgue. You know what I mean? There's so many other great songs in there that have to be switched in.
Right. Yeah, if they said we're going to play Drifter, I think, you know, I would probably stand on my chair.
Maybe I'll take my chair out of the floor.
Right. This is totally uninteresting to people who don't dig Maiden. So let's go out. Since we're calling Maiden the ambassadors, and we got to recognize that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of times when I play Iron Maiden around people who don't like metal, especially Bruce Dickinson stuff. They go like, I can't take this stuff. Like, and Bruce Dickinson's voice is absolutely not user-friendly, let's face it. I mean, I love his voice. I love his voice, but I'm saying, you know, the general public doesn't want to hear Bruce Dickinson's very screamy, and then when he's not screaming, sometimes he'll get very, his voice will get very harsh. Or even hammy. You know, he even gets kind of like Shatner-esque sometimes. You know, he gets a little bit hammy. So I think he's tough on a lot of people. How would you sell Maiden to, that's the experience I see.
It's funny that you're bringing this up, because I just sold them today to kids in my class. We're in half days now. It's the end of the year.
Uh-huh.
And I teach high school art, by the way. It's for your listeners. Nobody's going to know what we're talking about.
Right.
So we have half days and there's exams. So I have a half hour homeroom. So I have time with my kids where there's nothing to do. And something came up about music, and something came up, you know, got into heavy metal. And a couple of kids know I listen to heavy metal. And there's a few of them, and of course they had the same opinion of it that everybody else thinks there is, especially with kids nowadays. You know, they're exposed to crap, so they have no idea what's out there. And, you know, their perception of it was that it's screaming and yelling and banging on guitars. I said, okay, I'm going to prove all of you wrong right now. I brought them the computer. I put on YouTube. I put on Iron Maiden and Stranger in a Strange Land. And I said, listen to this and tell me if he's screaming and yelling. Tell me if they're just banging on guitars. Tell me if you don't hear the melody. Tell me if you don't hear a great chorus. And I proved all of them wrong. They were just like, wow. We were like, they had no idea that this stuff existed like that.
Good choice, too. Because, you know, also, those are lyrics that are intelligent and have some emotional depth and have some, you know, right. So it just disproves everything. There's no mention of Satan.
Right. And there's a great melody. It's still got, it's got metal riffs in it. The solo is so awesome. It just reflects all the melody that's in the chorus and in the song itself. And there's great singing. I mean, it's got peaks and valleys in it too, a couple times. And the kids were, you know, they were just totally, I think I blew their head off. They didn't have any idea.
Yep. And I think that's excellent. Actually, that's a good song to choose. And it's not atypical. Like, I'd say you could play Prodigal Son by Iron Maiden, which is a very, it's almost an acoustic, it's almost like a folk song, which is very, but it's very, that's not really, like, if you sell, that's almost cheating, because that's not really a true, right. It's one of my favorite, I love the song, but it's not representative of what Maiden's all about.
Right, right. And then I went a step further, and aside from Iron Maiden, then I put on something newer, like the new Symphony X, Iconoclast.
Okay.
Which is even a little more progressive, but it's still melodic and still heavy. And they heard it in that too. They were like, wow, they had no idea. They're like, this is really cool. Because, you know, there's groove, there's rhythm to it. It's not just bashing on stuff. You know, there's a direction to it. There's a goal.
Right. No, absolutely. And you know, and the other thing, the other appeal, I'd say, is you know, for kids who are into it, you know, Maiden would sing about, like, To Tame a Land is about Dune, you know, Frank Herbert's Dune. And Rime of the Ancient Mariner is a cool story to listen to. And Stranger in a Strange Land, it's not based on the book, but it's still very, very cool story. You know,
it's a little story. It's a little story.
Right. So lyrically, it's kind of got a little bit of a geek appeal, honestly. I mean, there's no other way of putting it. Maiden's lyrics are kind of have his, you know, Passchendaele, of course, is about World War One. So there's a little bit of
very, you know, fantasy based always.
Yeah, well, right. And sometimes
historically a lot of times, but, you know, fantasy. Imaginative, right. Creative. Imaginative and creative. Takes you to a faraway place.
Right. And at least as far as Maiden goes, they don't take it to, like, the extremes that, like, say Manowar to
right. They just go over the top, and it's all about Conan the Barbarian and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, Rich, I gotta cut us off. We're going forever.
I know, we can go forever, dude.
Yeah, but I want to thank you for being on. Hopefully my hard drive won't blow up this time, and we'll
Thanks.
Get a...
Thanks for having me again.
I appreciate
hope we all learned from all this, because we covered a lot of ground.
No, we definitely did. And hopefully those people who didn't click off the interview 10 minutes in are, you know, or have learned a thing or two and are, you know, found something to be interested in the metal that we appreciate. And I think everyone should go and check out metalasylum.net and also... Thank you. The film. it's been a pleasure being associated with Mental Asylum all these years. I'm looking forward to, you know, to many more.
And it's been great having you write for us, too. You do some good stuff. It's always good, right? Listen, it's always a good read for your stuff. So look forward to more stuff coming from you.
Thanks, man. All right, everybody. This is Rich Catino from Metal Asylum.
Thanks, guys.
All right, I'm going to snap.